From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we continue an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast that we began on our previous broadcast. Hank is talking with Christian counselor and former gay activist Joe Dallas concerning same-sex sexuality, transgenderism, and the church. Let's pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Joe Dallas.
What happens to children? You have same-sex couples raising children and people saying that's just as good as gender-differentiated parenting. But the reality is it's not.
No, in fact, in my book, I pointed this out. The book you mentioned earlier, Speaking of Homosexuality, there's a whole chapter on marriage and its redefinition. What I tried to point out was nobody is arguing that two lesbian women or two homosexual men are inevitably going to abuse or violate their children. That is not true. And of course, if you pit the worst case against the best case scenario, if you look at, say, a heterosexual couple and both of them shoot heroin and beat their children versus a lesbian couple who are both hardworking and live relatively moderate lives, raising their children responsibly, well, of course, the children of the lesbian couple will do better. But if you compare on the average the results of parenting, comparing a same-sex couple to an opposite-sex couple, invariably what you find is that an opposite-sex couple brings natural parenting skills to the table, which a same-sex couple will not bring. Thereby, children raised by same-sex parents are deprived of the full benefit that a heterosexual couple, a man and woman in tandem, bring to the parenting team. That is undeniable. So it's not so much a matter of children raised by gay or lesbian couples suffering from terrible abuse or mistreatment. Rather, they simply do not get the full advantage that is brought by a male-female parenting team.
You think about the impact today of the culture on this generation. You have TV, you have movies, you have the media, you have music, who said, if I control the music, I care not who makes the laws. Was that Napoleon? I can't remember. But at any rate, you have this cultural milieu that is changing the minds of people in such a profound and powerful way that it's very, very difficult to get past the emotion. In other words, you're talking rationally about this issue. You're parsing the details. You're getting into the minutiae. You understand this issue better than probably anyone on the planet. But most people are dealing with this issue not on the basis of intellect, but emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do about that?
I'm afraid so. And I think this is where, as believers, and Hank, I dare say, as apologists, whether we are someone like you who is an apologist by profession or simply informed believers who are trying to reason with non-believers, we can appeal again to the value of reason versus all decisions being made on strictly an emotional basis. And I think there is still a place for that, but I do think we have to realize what we are up against. When people have been largely indoctrinated by the media, by the entertainment industry, by the education industry, to believe that a traditional belief about marriage and family is akin to the belief system of a member of the KKK or the American Nazi Party. When people have been conditioned to believe that the positions you and I are holding and expressing are in the same category as the KKK or the Nazi Party, their emotional reaction will be severe, so severe that they won't even hear what they say. I was approached once by some Nazis who wanted to try to reason with me, and I was so appalled to see these young men in Nazi uniform, proud that they held Hitler's beliefs, who really wanted to say, you know, Joe, before you judge us, just hear us out. We really have some logical reasons for believing what we believe. I was so disgusted, Hank, I'll admit, I really couldn't hear them. I thought of the millions of people who suffered horrendous death and agony over that particular doctrine. I was so repulsed I couldn't see straight. Well, that's the way the culture is being conditioned to feel about those of us who simply hold a traditional view on marriage and sexuality. That is what we're up against.
So where's all this going? We've sort of talked a little bit about where we've been, but where are we going? I mean, where's all this heading? If people do not wake up, people of conscience, Christians, if we don't wake up, where is this headed? I mean, how much worse can it get?
Well, it can get quite a bit worse, of course, Hank, because the end goal is either the conversion or the silencing of the body of Christ. Either one will do. Either the body must be converted to believe that homosexuality is legitimate and give lip service to the pro-gay interpretation of the Bible, or the body must be silenced through hate crime legislation, through the sort of draconian bills that we're seeing passed in California. So we are facing either conversion or silencing. Now, what's that going to require of the church? Ultimately, at the risk of sounding doomsday, this absolutely could lead to an underground church. Because all it takes, in my opinion, is for the right administration to get into D.C., the right Congress, the right Supreme Court justices, and you could have the government basically saying, we will henceforth control what may or may not be said, even from the pulpits in the church. And that means basically a state church. And if the government does get that kind of control, and let's not kid ourselves into thinking there are many in government who would like that control, why, that will drive a lot of believers strictly to the point of saying, okay, well, we're going to basically become an underground church. And that means we will continue to teach biblical truth to each other. We will live by that truth, and we will hold each other up, and that's the way we will function. Now, this is, you know, horrible to be thinking about in the United States of America. This is so wrong.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, though, Joe, is you say this is sort of doomsday talk, but if you've traveled the world, if you spend a lot of time in places like China, if you're reading unauthorized materials in unauthorized places, you can easily be arrested. So there is an underground church there. There's also a church that is controlled by the communist government, a registered church. But the underground church is very, very real. And I've been in meetings where we've had to kind of break up the meeting and move to a different location. Because if we didn't, we would likely get arrested. In other words, we're getting a little too loud and there are too many people around, and so you got to break up the meeting. So when you talk about doomsday, I mean, you need to let people know, as you're doing in a very, very compelling fashion, you need to let people know that this is not like, wow, this is really crazy talk. This can't ever happen. Well, it's going on as we speak in many parts of the world.
And you know, an important point to all of that, Hank, what makes us think human nature is essentially different in America than it is in China? I mean, human nature is such in its fallen state that people want power, they want control. And a lot of people think, oh, you're just weaving some sinister demonic plot. Well, I think there are some very natural ramifications to this. Christianity is not good for totalitarianism. Christianity does not encourage acquiescence to a regime. Where there is Christianity flourishing, you have individualism, you have creativity, you have free speech, you have free thought, you have basic human dignities that allow for diversity in the truest sense. Therefore, biblically based Christianity is a terrible threat to anybody who wants to control a culture. Thereby, of course, any culture that is given over to being controlled is going to find that the churches will have to, if they wish to exist in a thriving way, they'll have to exist in an underground fashion. And again, what makes us think that America would be exempt to that? Human beings are human beings, be they Chinese or Caucasian.
Let's talk. I know you don't want to talk about personalities necessarily, but I'm going to bring up our president, President Trump. A lot of Christians voted for President Trump because they're quite convinced that he would preserve religious liberties. And it looks like that's the bent that he has. But on the other hand, there are many people that say, how could you as a Christian vote for someone like Donald Trump if you look at his own personal life? You look at his sexual life. So we're being duplicitous, as it were. So in a sense, that's a hard one. I mean, you have to be as wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove. Give us some counsel on that.
That is a tough one. Well, I think ultimately, when we vote for a president, we are voting for the policies that president is likely to enact more than we are voting based on the character of the person. I hate to think that we have to make a choice between the two, but at times we do. So this is different to me than, for example, looking at the qualifications of a pastor leading my church. A pastor leading my church must be living an exemplary life, or I would not be willing to follow him. But when we are talking about a secular leader, oftentimes I will look at the two primary contestants for leadership, whether it's at the national or at the state level, and I'll think basically which one is going to endorse the policies that I believe are in the best interest of the state or in the best interest of the nation. Personally, I vote according to that. That is how I cast my vote. I would prefer it if the person whose policies I support also is living an exemplary life. But if that person is not, it is still the policies he's going to enact that I'm more concerned about. So that is how I take it. Now, let me say this plainly, Hank. This last election, I knew plenty of believers who were strong Trump supporters because they felt his policies would, among other things, be such that they would defend religious freedom. But I also knew believers who just said, I cannot in good conscience vote for the man. And I like what Paul said to the Romans, let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. I think we have to be mature enough to allow for that and to recognize that, okay, other believers will not share my views on a number of issues, and I'm going to have the maturity to allow for that kind of diversity of thought and for every man to operate according to his own conscience before God.
You know, what's interesting is you have people now who are involved in very aberrant behaviors from a Christian perspective, lecturing those who oppose these aberrant behaviors on the basis of sexual morality. It seems like an oxymoron.
Well, I've started using a new term, impuritans. It's rather sarcastic, but, you know, we think of puritanical as very rigid and imposing. Well, I find the impuritans are also very rigid and imposing. This is not a time of diversity. This is a time when people are seeking a one viewpoint only approach to homosexuality and transsexualism and to abortion and to the definition of marriage. And I find that these groups are far more rigid than the most puritanical conservative groups I have seen in my lifetime. And so I think it's the difference between, say, Mars Hill and Babylon. In Mars Hill, you have at least a variety of different beliefs being expressed, so Paul can stride into that environment and say, okay, let's talk. In Babylon, you're in exile.
Yep.
And there is a high price to pay if you buck the government. Of course, it gets even worse if you're in Sodom, because then not only is sin very present, it will come knocking on your door looking for you. So my honest opinion is we're somewhere between Babylon and Sodom at this point.
Joe, in your opinion, what is the next shoe to drop in the sexual revolution?
I think the behavior has gone about as far as it's going to go for some time. I don't think we're on the verge of legitimizing adult child sex. There's still enough cultural outcry about that, although I think eventually it is feasible that that will be celebrated as well. Certainly, I think we're going to see the legitimization of polygamy. I don't see how we can avoid that. But I think the main thrust of the sexual revolution at this point, Hank, is not going to be about celebrating new additional forms of sexual behavior. It will be about rigidly suppressing any expressed opposition to these behaviors.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Christian counselor and former gay activist Joe Dallas. When a family member or friend says, "I'm gay," it can be very difficult to hear, but also difficult for the same-sex attracted person to utter. In these heartbreaking situations, having the right response is crucial. Few can navigate these troubled waters like Joe Dallas. In his book, When Homosexuality Hits Home, What to Do When a Loved One Says, "I'm Gay," Joe offers experienced and compassionate counsel for those whose loved ones struggle with homosexual desire. Receive your copy of When Homosexuality Hits Home as our thank you for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Addressing some of the most difficult issues we face in our day-to-day lives, C.S. Lewis's timeless words provide an unparalleled path to greater spiritual understanding. Considered by many to be his most moving address, The Weight of Glory extols a compassionate vision of Christianity and compelling discussions on forgiveness and faith. The Weight of Glory is a compilation of addresses delivered by Lewis during World War II, offering deep insights into the hope Christianity has to offer in the midst of immense suffering and uncertainty. To receive your copy of The Weight of Glory by C.S. Lewis, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or just visit us online at equip.org. That's equip.org. Like a tiny acorn that grows into a massive oak tree, the seeds of the sexual revolution planted in the 1960s have produced a harvest of immorality beyond imagination. Today's pervasive acceptance of homosexuality was inconceivable only a generation ago, and the dizzying pace at which sexual mores have collapsed often leaves Bible-believing Christians at a loss. The books Speaking of Homosexuality and When Homosexuality Hits Home by Joe Dallas will help you engage the culture in a transformative way for Christ. To receive either Speaking of Homosexuality or When Homosexuality Hits Home as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Many feminists see the warped value system portrayed in Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale as a reflection of Christian and social conservative ideologies. In reality, the dominant secular worldview, with its idolization of sexual freedom and rejection of intrinsic human dignity, fosters in the actual world the very oppression seen in the series. Other topics include how the structure and comprehensibility of the universe reveal a mindful maker, five apologetics lessons from the writings of Martin Luther King Jr., kindergartners need apologetics too, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at the new discounted rate by calling 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank invited Christian counselor and former gay activist Joe Dallas to discuss same-sex sexuality, transgenderism, and the church. Let's rejoin the conversation.
I think the main thrust of the sexual revolution at this point, Hank, is not going to be about celebrating new additional forms of sexual behavior. It will be about rigidly suppressing any expressed opposition to these behaviors. I think the sexual revolution has basically become the censorship revolution. And I think that that is where the thrust of the efforts are going to go, into laws like what we're seeing in California, into hate crime legislation, into more and more pressure being put on people, not even to silently agree to disagree, but to voice agreement. It reminds me of the heavy-handedness of the French Revolution, where you not only had to agree with the goals and practices of the revolution, you could actually be punished if you were not expressing sufficient enthusiasm about those goals. So you better be cheering loudly while the aristocrats are being taken to the guillotine, or else you yourself come under suspicion. I think that's where we're headed.
Looking at your own personal ministry, which is very, very significant, not only in terms of the books that you have written, but the lives that you have changed through counseling, what do you see on the horizon for yourself?
Gosh, my first rather smart alecky reaction is, well, I'll make a pretty good Uber driver. I mean, I think I can do that. Hank, I think that those of us who do this type of work, myself included, here's what I really think. I think we are a lot like Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet in the movie Titanic. We know that the ship has been hit. We keep running on the top of the deck to find the highest point. We know it's all going to go down eventually, but we keep trying to find the safest place where we can still continue to thrive. And that's what we're going to be doing. I'm going to be like all of my colleagues who do this. We're all prayerfully considering what is the next step. We're not going to stop, but I do think we are going to work harder with local churches to basically help equip them to do more of what we've been doing. Because I think the point is going to come where we're going to hand the baton off and say, hey, we can't do it anymore. We can't do it as a profession. And so I see us broadening our approach. First of all, taking the specific tools we've learned to use, and as God gives opportunity, passing them on to whoever wants them. And we'll make use of them. And then those of us who do this kind of work, we are geared towards ministry. We want to teach the scripture. We want to disciple people. And we want to do that in an even broader sense. A lot of us are finding more and more places of leadership within our own churches. And a lot of us are realizing that, hey, there will always be people responding to the gospel, responding to truth, and wanting to see their lives conformed to it. Whether privately or publicly, we will still be there for them.
Talk about your personal disposition towards all of this. I mean, you made light of it in saying you could always be an Uber driver, which, of course, leaves me out of the picture completely. But you sort of made light of that on the one hand. But, I mean, there's got to be, I mean, this is, you've given your life to something. You're really seeing dramatic impacts in the lives of others. That could be taken away from you. Obviously, you can continue to serve the Lord as people do in the persecuted church all over the world. But I just want to know how you feel about it personally. What's your emotional predisposition with respect to all of this?
Oh, it hurts. Hank, it hurts. I'm sad. I'm angry. I'm a little bewildered. You mentioned this before, but I'll reiterate it. This is nothing I didn't expect. But when it actually happens, I still feel shocked, even though I knew it was coming. So I'm very sad. Sometimes I feel downright numb because of the whole thing. And I'm having to really think now, how am I going to continue to support my wife? My sons are grown and both doing very well. But I've never been a rich man, and I'm never going to be, but I'd like to be able to pay my bills and see my wife into the third, into the last third of our lives. We're both in our 60s now. Why we're, I'm wanting to make sure she is cared for. And I'd like to be able to continue doing what I love to do. So the prospect of not being able to do it makes me very sad, or the prospect of having to do it in a more limited or more creative way, creative being code word for sneaky. That's sad as well. But I'm reminded of something I read in Corrie ten Boom's autobiography, The Hiding Place, when she talked about how her work in Holland, sheltering Jewish families in her home, was becoming more and more dangerous. There were more and more people finding out what they were doing, and the danger factor was getting higher and higher. But she said, we prayed long into the night about what to do, and we determined we couldn't stop. And then she said something interesting. She said, this was evil's hour. We could not run from it. Perhaps only when human effort had done its best and failed would God's power alone be free to work. That's where I stand.
That's beautiful. I want to quote a passage of Scripture and have you comment. It's a very, very popular passage in part. We know part of it by heart, but a lot of the surrounding text we don't know, where the Apostle Peter says, who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear what they fear. Don't be frightened. But in your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and with respect, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. It is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. We're familiar with always be ready to give an answer, but I love the surrounding text as well, because it puts everything with respect to apologetics in proper proportion.
You know, it really does, Hank, and you notice it puts it in the perspective of people who are experiencing difficulty. But what it reminds me is something my wife and I have talked about quite a bit, and that is, you know, God is not necessarily calling us to have a desired earthly outcome. That is to say, God is not necessarily calling me to be able to change the state of California's mind on this issue. We are not necessarily called to have the success we would like to have. That doesn't mean we don't want to have it. We do. But it's not necessarily our what we are responsible for, because free will is still going to be exercised. People will exercise their free will. We cannot override it. But, and this is an important but, we will, when we stand before the judgment seat of Christ, be judged by how we lawfully strove in this life. And that is to say, an honorable ministry is more important than what we call a successful ministry. A successful ministry meaning we got everything we hoped to get, we won all the battles we hoped to win. What is more important is the honorableness with which we have conducted ourselves in our attitude, our words, our actions. So that, yes, if we are slandered, yes, if we are mistreated, yes, if we are persecuted, if we are able to say, to the best of my ability, I have run the race honorably, there are eternal rewards for that. And this is where we have to keep our focus sharp, is that this is a race, for heaven's sake. In the race, you don't concentrate on how comfortable you can make yourself on the track. You concentrate on the goal. I want to finish the race. And that being the case, if we keep our eyes on the goal, well, like Jesus said, you lay up rewards in heaven where nothing's going to rust, nothing's going to get moth-eaten, all of the evil and the deception of this world is not going to corrupt what is waiting for us in eternity. And I think if we are wise at all, we're going to keep our eyes set on that. Otherwise, we may just lose our minds.
You know, I want to talk a little more about that. We lost Elliot Miller.
Yes.
Editor-in-chief of the Christian Research Journal. And
yes, you talk about hurt. That hurts Hank.
Yeah.
He's what a wonderful guy.
Yeah, and he was with the Christian Research Institute 42 years. He shepherded the Christian Research Journal during those years. Made an enormous impact. But I still remember just a few weeks ago being with him in his home with Corinne, his wife. And he looked at me and he said, Hank, I wish I could have done more. And I said, Elliot, what you have done is tremendous. You have little concept of the impact of your life on the lives of so many, the large shadow that you have cast. And he started crying. And when he recomposed himself, he said, thank you so much for that encouragement. I will take those words to my grave. And the reason I bring that up, Joe, is Elliot is now, and it's, you know, all fresh, it's wet cement. He's now absent the body, present with the Lord. And what you just said is now real. It's a verity. He's laid up for himself treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not corrupt and where thieves do not break in and steal. There's nothing more he can do. He has run the race that you just mentioned. He's finished that race. He's kept the faith. There's nothing more he can do. You and I, and we're both in our 60s, we're still in the flesh. There is something that we can do. And I want to take that as a springboard for you to say to people, look, you wanted to sound a clarion call about AB 2943, and rightly so. But you don't want to just be shouting into the air. You want people who are listening in, or there are a lot of people listening in right now, you want them to do something.
Three of the most important things I think we can do at this point, Hank, we have to know the truth. We must have it settled what God has said about the human condition and about what we are to do in response to the human condition. We have to know the truth. We have got to, secondly, live the truth. Hank, it is senseless for the church to start proclaiming truth that it is not living. We must be sure that we are respecting our own marriages, our own sanctity, that we are safeguarding our own purity. Whether that means getting internet filters, whether that means cutting out cable TV, whether that means walking away from an illicit relationship, whatever it means, whatever concerns we may have about everything we've talked about, let's remember the best blow you can strike against immorality is that of a moral life. Make sure we are living it. And then finally, let's be equipped and prepared to express truth.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Joe Dallas in just a few moments. Not long ago, the gay rights movement was asking that homosexual people be treated fairly and with respect. But today, mere legitimization is not enough. The gay rights movement now demands, with all the subtlety of a socialist purge, the punishment of anyone objecting to that legitimization. The book, Speaking of Homosexuality, Discussing the Issues with Kindness and Clarity by Joe Dallas, equips readers to respond to this volatile issue with reason and compassion. To receive your copy of Speaking of Homosexuality as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or give online at equip.org.
We'll be back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Christian counselor and former gay activist Joe Dallas on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. There is a mysterious resonance among the structure of the material world, the abstract world of mathematics, and the human mind. This three-part harmony has major implications for the contemporary debate between naturalism and theism. The sciences alone, however, are insufficient to illuminate this enigma. Other topics include The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. Slaughterhouse-Five is a tool for Christian self-examination. Redeeming Princess Culture, Five Apologetics Lessons from the Writings of Martin Luther King Jr., and much, much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at the new discounted rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
In today's culture, it seems that if you're a liberal, anything you say is protected. But if you're a conservative, anything you say is hateful. At the heart of this cultural divide is the issue of homosexuality and the increasing demands of the gay rights movement. The gay rights movement has evolved from a plea for tolerance to a demand for not only approval, but retribution. In his books, Speaking of Homosexuality and When Homosexuality Hits Home, author, speaker, and counselor Joe Dallas brings his wisdom and experience to these sensitive issues in a deep and eminently practical way. To receive either Speaking of Homosexuality or When Homosexuality Hits Home as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches or visit us at equip.org. C.S. Lewis famously described himself as the most dejected and reluctant convert in all England. As such, there's no better title for a show telling the story of his conversion than C.S. Lewis on Stage, the Most Reluctant Convert. Max MacLean, a masterful storyteller, portrays Lewis perfectly, telling the story of how one man went from being the most reluctant convert to one of the most influential Christians of our time. As thanks for your gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you the DVD, C.S. Lewis on Stage, The Most Reluctant Convert. Just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also visit us online at equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank invited Christian counselor Joe Dallas to discuss same-sex attraction, transgenderism, and the church. Let's rejoin the conversation.
Whatever concerns we may have about everything we've talked about, let's remember the best blow you can strike against immorality is that of a moral life. Make sure we are living it. And then finally, let's be equipped and prepared to express truth as wisdom and opportunity dictate. We have got to be willing, whether in conversations with family members, on the job, at our schools, there is a place for engaging people. These hot button social issues, they cry out for somebody to say, well, this is what our Creator has expressed about this very thing. Let's look at that. And I am hoping that the attempts to suppress speaking truth will embolden the church the way they did in the book of Acts. I see them when they were experiencing repression, coming together and praying and saying, Lord, look at their threatenings and make us bolder. And that's exactly what happened. Now, there's no reason it couldn't happen today.
Yeah. And when you say boldness, I don't want people to be confused as to your meaning, because the subtitle of your latest book, as I alluded to earlier, is discussing the issues with kindness and clarity. So as this becomes more and more heated, as you're being vilified, you'll have to respond in a way that mirrors the response of Christ.
As a matter of fact, if what you want is impact, let's never mistake noise for boldness. Let's never mistake brashness for boldness, because that doesn't really have much impact. Just look at what you see on news programs when people sit there shouting at each other, and you turn off the TV and think, I don't even know what they were talking about. They just made a lot of noise. So that's not having impact. Boldness means a willing to speak with clarity as it is appropriate. And clarity does not necessarily involve volume. It doesn't have to involve that at all. As a matter of fact, I think that we have much more credibility when we refuse to be a part of the fireworks, and we choose rather to just be a part of the light. And that we can do.
You're one of those Christian leaders that's not only a tremendous orator, but you're also a great writer. And I love great writers like you. I want to finish my discussion with you, the podcast, by talking about some of your books, maybe a quick overview. By the way, you can find all of these books on the web at equip.org. Desires in Conflict, Answering the Struggle for Sexual Identity.
Yes, Hank, that will be the first book to go, by the way. In California, as you know, according to this bill, AB 2943, books on this subject cannot be sold in California. So I'm not sure how Amazon.com is going to handle that, but that is written directly to the man who wants to overcome homosexuality. It talks to him about expectations, about repentance, about establishing healthy relationships. The first book I ever wrote back in 1991, you were very kind way back then in giving me plenty of airtime to discuss it, and I've always appreciated that.
The Gay Gospel, How Pro-Gay Advocates Misread the Bible. The significance of that book can't be overstated.
No, that is a look at what pro-gay revisionists are doing as they reinterpret the Bible and how to respond to that. I wrote that book in 1996. It had an update in 2003, and it basically takes the pro-gay interpretation of the Bible and explains how that interpretation is made, and then offers different rebuttals to it. It also has a history of what I call the pro-gay religious movement in America, how it came to be and where it's headed.
Yeah, so this is one of those books that teaches you to read the Bible in the sense in which it's intended, the complete Christian guide to understanding homosexuality.
Yes, that was an ambitious project. I had the pleasure of working with Dr. Nancy Hache on that. The actress Anne Hache has a Christian mother, and that's Nancy. And we both co-edited and contributed to that book. It hits on just about every topic relative to homosexuality, whether it's counseling lesbian women, homosexual men, pastoral ministry, AIDS, gay teenagers, transsexualism, and some of the different legal and political issues that come up with the subject as well. So that's a hopefully a one-stop kind of a book for anybody wanting to find any subject relative to homosexuality. What's the Christian perspective of it, and how do I present that perspective?
One of my favorites, The Game Plan, Men's 30-Day Strategy for Attaining Sexual Integrity. I think that's an absolutely must-read for Christians.
Well, you were kind enough to endorse that one. I loved writing that, Hank. That's written for any Christian man who is either struggling with any kind of a secret sexual sin, the use of porn, possibly an on-the-job flirtation, an affair, fornication, whatever, or for any Christian man who wants to protect his purity and realizes, my gosh, I get hit from all sides, what do I do about it? That's a 30-day strategy for saying, okay, this day you have a reading to do, the next day an exercise, the next day a reading, and so forth. And it walks the person through a process of basically getting well-equipped to manage his sexual desires and protect the integrity of his home.
So you're saying in this book that you can break an addiction to pornography. And I think this is very important because there are so many, not just men in the Christian church, I mean, we're not talking about the culture, we're actually talking about the church here as well, not just laity, but also pastors addicted to pornography. And you're saying overtly, look, this is a horrendous addiction. It has huge implications, not only for your personal life, but for civilization. But this is an addiction that could be broken.
Absolutely. And there is no reason to assume that any addiction cannot be broken, but we must recognize the power of that addiction. Pornography is much more powerful, much more compelling than I think we've given it credit for, Hank. The whole ritual of using pornography becomes a very strong form of bondage at several different levels, both mental and emotional, and definitely, I think, spiritual. So this is something we have to take seriously because I'm afraid porn has lost its shock value in this culture. I don't think we recognize what it can do to a person's soul and to that person's ability to relate in a healthy way. So hopefully the man who has a porn problem would take the time to pick up this book and find freedom.
Yeah, again, I don't go off on a tangent here, but when you say this is a problem, a porn problem, the way it's being presented in the culture today is as though it is, well, actually kind of a virtuous addiction.
Well, we're to the point now where there is much reduced shame over the use of pornography. People who engage in performing for pornographic films have more of a respectable platform than they've ever had. The industry retains its multi-billion dollar status, and it is so interwoven into American life that even people who believe it's wrong sort of greet it with a shrug like, oh, well, it's not okay, but it's not that big of a deal. Everybody does it, so what? And I think that what it's doing to us collectively is much more serious than most people really appreciate.
Oh, one of the best titles on the planet, A Strong Delusion.
Well, that's, of course, taken from Paul's statement to the Thessalonians about a strong delusion, God sending strong delusion. But I broadened it a little to talk about people who are where I was when I was a part of the gay church, who have, through rebellion, set themselves up to be deluded. I decided to yield to my homosexual feelings. I did that rebelliously. As a result, I was ripe for delusion. I was deceived into thinking that God was okay with that decision. And it became a very strong delusion, one that I passionately defended until God brought me to repentance. So in that book, I talk more about the experience, what it is like to be so deluded and what elements can bring a person out of that delusion.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about reading your books is that you talk about your own circumstance and use that as a springboard for communicating truth, and you do so beautifully. And I love when you talk about your own experiences, when you repented, when you became a Christian, when you started facing your own demons. You did so, and you made a lot of mistakes. You share those mistakes so that those who read your books don't feel as though they're talking to someone in an ivory tower, but someone that's walked this path before them.
Yes, and just as you said, walked it very imperfectly. My particular pilgrim's progress has a lot of potholes I fell into along the way, but I also know myself, Hank, I would not be able to learn very well from someone who couldn't relate to any of my weaknesses. So I do try to make it clear, I do get it, buddy. I know what it's like to try and mess up and pick yourself up and try again.
And the last book of notes, speaking of homosexuality, happens to be one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you. Well, that one I felt very passionate about. That's written primarily for people who want a dialogue about this, for people who want to be well-equipped to have an informed conversation with somebody about homosexuality from a biblical worldview perspective. And so I wrote this book kind of clarifying what sort of arguments or questions or objections you were likely to run into when you had these conversations. I tried to provide talking points, explanations of the arguments, and some suggestions as to how to express a biblical worldview in times that are getting very hostile to that worldview. So that's sort of a user's guide. If you want to have a dialogue with someone, anybody, about homosexuality, that's the book.
Joe, I've known you for many years, and as I said to Elliot, you have cast such an enormous shadow. You've done so much good for so many people. The contributions you've made to the Christian Research Institute through your knowledge, through the gentle and very compelling way in which you speak, will never be forgotten. So when you sometimes feel, as I know we all do, defeated, as though you're under the pile, we want you to remember just how much you are loved and appreciated at the Christian Research Institute. And how many people that you'll never know this side of eternity have been impacted by your words? You're truly a gem. You're a treasure in the Christian church.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know anybody who doesn't need encouragement, and I'll tell you, I certainly need it. I got to admit, more than ever. So thank you, Hank. I appreciate that.
Well, you are appreciated and loved, and I'm glad that you brought our attention to this issue. Is there anything else that needs to be said?
More than ever, I think just a call to prayer and a call to wisdom. And please remember us, those of us that are doing this type of work. We need your prayers. Go to God for us, not only that we're able to keep doing what we do, but that we do it well, that we do it in the ways that honor Him.
There you have it, Joe Dallas. Again, Joe is Program Director of Genesis Counseling in Tustin, California. It's a Christian counseling service to men dealing with sexual addiction, with homosexuality and other sexual relational problems. He's a member of the American Association of Christian Counselors, and he's the author of multiple books on human sexuality. We talked about those books. You can find those books on the web at equip.org, and they're available for your support of the ministry. Just request one of those books, and you will not be disappointed.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Christian counselor and former gay activist Joe Dallas in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Joe Dallas's book, Speaking of Homosexuality, Discussing the Issues with Kindness and Clarity, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Many feminists see the warped value system portrayed in Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale as a reflection of Christian and social conservative ideologies. In reality, the dominant secular worldview, with its idolization of sexual freedom and rejection of intrinsic human dignity, fosters in the actual world the very oppression seen in the series. Other topics include how the structure and comprehensibility of the universe reveal a mindful maker, five apologetics lessons from the writings of Martin Luther King Jr., kindergartners need apologetics too, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at the new discounted rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Like a tiny acorn that grows into a massive oak tree, the seeds of the sexual revolution planted in the 1960s have produced a harvest of immorality beyond imagination. Today's pervasive acceptance of homosexuality was inconceivable only a generation ago.
and the dizzying pace at which sexual mores have collapsed often leaves Bible-believing Christians at a loss. The books Speaking of Homosexuality and When Homosexuality Hits Home by Joe Dallas will help you engage the culture in a transformative way for Christ. To receive either Speaking of Homosexuality or When Homosexuality Hits Home as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.